All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Thanks to tax reform, American businesses have opened doors throughout our communities, investing in U.S. manufacturing, workers, and innovation, spurring 500,000 new jobs with higher wages and better training, and setting a new record high in corporate taxes paid. Tell Congress to extend and strengthen the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Paid for by Business Roundtable.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
We're excited to announce that our 2025 retreats are open for registration. Join us in Minnesota, June 15th through the 21st, for a Regenerate retreat, where you will learn new skills, generate new ideas, or focus on your writing. With lots of opportunities for restoration and networking, you'll leave refreshed and reinvigorated. Tickets start at $1,500 per person. You can also sail the high seas, September 18th through 26th. We'll sail out of Los Angeles on the Royal Caribbean Navigator of the Seas and explore the Mexican Riviera while refining our writing. Whether you're revising a story, reworking a character arc, or tweaking your prose, you'll leave more confident in your current story. Tickets start at $26.50 for writers and $23.50 for family members. To learn more, visit writingexcuses.com/retreats.
Season 20, Episode 8. This is Writing Excuses.
Character stakes and fears.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Dan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard.
This week, we're continuing our conversation about sort of the lens of who, talking about character. And the thing that I wanted to focus on this week is talking about how the fears that a character has and the stakes that a character faces help move them through the story and help create the story that exists around them, right? So last time we talked a lot about motivation and goals. And the way I think about motivation and goals is very internal, right? That is how the characters were relating to themselves. When it comes to stakes, now we're getting to the part where we're starting to feel tension, where the audience is relating to the character, we understand what their goals are, but now we're feeling the pressure that they're facing and how that's moving them through the world. And so when I think about stakes, I don't necessarily think about failure or danger, because we are all, your readers are all people. And as people, we tend to care about other people. And so what we care about are relationships more than we care about physical danger, right? So starting in an action scene can sometimes feel a little flat, but if you put a relationship under pressure in that, that's where a little bit more of that juice can come from. So how do you guys think about creating stakes, especially initially when you're jumping into a story?
I usually think about something that will make the character feel like less of themselves.
Mm.
So I find that early on, and then I see this with early career writers, that I would say, well, this, you know, the goal is to have the eight gems of Rohingya.
We got a C in it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I do
that
pronounce...
That letter is supposed to be an apostrophe.
Sorry, yeah. I do pronounce the apostrophes. It's a regional variation. And if they fail, then they don't have the eight gems. And an inverse of the goal is not, mm-hmm. like, that's not compelling. Or they're like, and then they might die, which is actually, like, the least compelling
exactly
thing. I think then a friend might die, mm-hmm. you know, but that's...
Or your parent will think you're a failure because you didn't bring the HMs back.
Yeah,
right?
That's significantly worse exactly. for most people.
Yeah.
You do not want someone to be disappointed in you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think a lot of stakes often come down to what do I stand to lose rather than what do I stand to gain?
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much about gaining those gems, this is how the D&D movie starts, is look at this great life that I had before everything went wrong. And we see him throughout the movie trying to get back to zero, just trying to struggle back to regain the things that he lost in the first place.
Sometimes the stake can be really kind of small. Like when you look at back at this is how you lose a time war, that, mm-hmm. that initial stake was, if I don't check this, I'm going to be curious mm-hmm. for the rest of my immortal life. Mm-hmm. You know, just that, oh, what am I going to miss? It, and it's a small, small thing, but it is the thing that also is the catalyst. Mm-hmm.
And then the stakes of that so quickly become what it does this other person think of me. They might mm-hmm. think I'm not a worthy competitor.
Yeah.
I might not think I'm a worthy, companion, by the end of it. And the evolution of that stake is the thing that gives so much of the tension to that little novel.
One thing I really like is when something feels low stakes and then it turns out that it was worse than you thought. You know, the thing yeah. like, oh, I'm just like trying to like get my cup of coffee so I can, make it through the day. But actually it turns out that there is something about, I cannot think of what that would be, about getting that cup of coffee that is like suddenly the most important thing. And because when you're doing something low stakes, it's like if you're doing a low stakes mission in life, you're not super prepared. You're just like, I need to do this one thing. I'm only bringing what I need to get this small thing done. If that small thing becomes huge, then all of a sudden you are unprepared. You're afraid that you will fail. You feel like you have not brought your best self maybe to the table. And then it taps into those like sort mm-hmm. of deeper fears about who am I? What will people think of me? It's sort of the same thing that gets people to often, when I go to karaoke, people will talk about how bad their voice is today. You don't want people to think that you're doing your best and you failed. You'd rather, it's yeah. like I could have done better if things had been set up differently for me.
I see this in critique groups. I actually have my critiquers do a ritual apology before we begin, where everybody apologizes all at the same time, because all of them are afraid that people will think that they're not a good writer and that they are lesser. And when I'm sometimes talking to a student who's having a little bit of a meltdown, I'm like, okay, but what is actually the worst thing that can mm-hmm. go wrong mm-hmm. if someone doesn't like your story? And they're like, it doesn't get published. And I'm like, and what's the worst thing that can go wrong if it doesn't get published? I write a new story. I'm like, great.
Yeah.
Is that a bad outcome? Yeah. No?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
For an example of going back to your sort of coffee thing kind of becoming bigger stakes, one of my favorite escalation of stakes scenes in a movie is in The Devil Wears Prada, where early on, Andy goes to get coffee for her boss and brings it back and kind of like is in a meeting about I can't remember exactly what it's about, and she kind of snickers at something, and there's this incredible speech that Miranda goes through about the color of the sweater that Andy is wearing in the scene. It's like the periwinkle blue speech, and it's like this thing that goes from the stakes of my job are absurd, I'm getting coffee for someone who runs a fashion magazine, to understanding the perspective of the people who run this magazine and why clothes and fashion and aesthetics matter in the world and the context of that, and her realizing that, oh no, I want the positive regard of this woman who is now yelling at me because I didn't take this seriously enough, right? And so that slow escalation as we understand the terms of the movie and the stakes of everything that's going to come for the rest of the movie is just a masterfully done scene.
At the same time, one of my favorite tropes is the complete opposite of this, mm-hmm. where we realize that what we thought were the big, big stakes really aren't as important as the small stakes. Yeah. The Prydain Chronicles does this really throughout, where for the several books, they don't need him to be a hero. They need him to be an assistant pig keeper because the pig's the hero and they need him to do that. And in book four, this kind of comes to a head with one of my favorite lines where he's trying to work with the witches and they say any hero can soar with the eagles, but let's see him scratch for his own worms. Like learning how to be a person, learning how to fend for yourself, how to survive in the world is so much more important than one or two acts of heroism.
I got to thinking about the stakes and the fears in the very first Iron Man movie because the movie begins and Tony Stark wants for nothing. He can afford to blow the deal. He can afford to screw up because he's so rich. It just doesn't matter. And then the very first set of stakes he's presented with are, now you might die. Now you need to invent or die. And those aren't the big stakes. He invents, he saves his life, and then he puts the whole company at risk. And now it is, now he might not have money. And then we find out, well, what was really happening here is someone's trying to take the company from you, and they're going to find another way to kill you. And the final battle in the movie is because Tony doesn't want them to hurt Pepper. It comes back to a personal thing. It is not, I need to wear the Iron Man suit to save the world or to save the company or to save my life. It is because my friend might die.
So while we all contemplate what we're all afraid of enough to make us a hero, let's take a break.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome back. So we've been talking sort of about character stakes and how that relates to relationships, right? And one of the things that comes into that idea of stakes is the concept of fear, right? We often have seen fear in stories as a negative to be overcome. But when you're thinking of how you're constructing character arc, how you're constructing a character, how are you thinking of what do I want to make this character afraid of? What fears are you putting into your characters that'll help move them forward through the story?
So this is why we wanted to tie these episodes together, because I will often look at their goals and motivations, and what I find is that there's something that the character, there's a hole, there's an absence in the character, there's something. And they are either running towards things, which are their goals, to try to fill it, or they are running away from the hole. Mm-hmm. And so the having to confront, oh, this is a lack in myself, is something that a lot of people are afraid of. Like, no one wants to confront their failings. No one wants to confront the fact that they're vain, or no one wants to confront the fact that they're insecure. No one wants to confront, like, people want to be self-sufficient. And so if I can create a fear and a reason to trigger that fear in them that causes them to have to confront that, mm-hmm. or to like flee from it. It's like, I don't want to believe that I'm selfish, so I'm going to help these people. But they're constantly like, but maybe I don't help them.
We talk a lot about how people tend to fear the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're actually afraid of the unknown. I think we're afraid of knowing it. There's a thing out there that I don't know anything about, and I would prefer not to. It may be a truth about me. It may be the fact that layoffs are coming. But there is a dark corner out there that I don't want to peer into, because it has information in it that is going to force me onto a new path, and I would rather continue to live with ignorance as bliss. And ignorance isn't actually bliss, but it's not the fear of the unknown. It's the fear of learning a thing that will now force me to change.
I would say it's even more than that. It's the fear of how other people see you changing.
Yes.
Right? That in encountering the unknown, you will be forced to change in some way through that encounter. And then what your partner thinks of, what your children thinks of you, what your friends think of you, what your boss thinks of you, all those will change when that layoff comes. And the thing you're afraid of is, how do I survive that? Is that a survivable encounter? And so I think tapping into that fear is going to be the thing that will drive your characters forward. And the thing I want to emphasize about when we talk about character fears like this, there's an instruction in the game Dialect that's a player instruction that I love a lot. And the instruction is very simple. It just says, be obvious. As a player, when you're making choices, make really obvious choices. And that will lead to complexity through the interaction of everyone at the table making obvious choices, not overthinking it. And so leaning into what your character's afraid of in a broad way will lead to specificity because of all the other stuff we've talked about in this section where we're talking about the lens of who, as they bounce off the other characters in your plot. But don't be afraid of them being afraid of a really broad thing of, oh, my partner's going to not like me enough. My parents won't love me anymore. My sister will hate me now, right? Like, those are really juicy, really powerful motivators that I think drive most people as they move through the world.
Well, and it's not just those choices that can be really obvious, but the resolutions, the way of dealing with them can be really blunt and obvious as well. Going back to previous episode, we talked about Toy Story, or I talked about Toy Story. What he really fears there is that he has no value unless he, and he, once again, he misinterprets that by saying, I will have value if I am the favorite toy. And that all comes to a head when he gives the huge speech to Buzz, you're a cool toy. And that is not only the moment where he convinces Buzz that it's okay to be a toy instead of an actual spaceman. That is very clearly and obviously the moment where Woody is convincing himself being a cool toy is awesome, even if I'm not the favorite toy. I don't need to find external validation. I can just love me for who I am, whether I'm the favorite toy or not.
It's occurring to me that what we're talking about here is basically give your character imposter syndrome.
Well, one of the thoughts that I had just a moment ago, after talking about, you know, the fear of the unknown, the fear of knowing the unknown, courage to me has always been defined as moving forward despite fear. It's not an absence of fear. Mm-hmm. It's moving forward despite fear. And I love the idea that if we're not afraid of the unknown, we're afraid of knowing what's there, then courage is picking up the flashlight and looking at what's in the corner. And that, just as a metaphor for me, feels like an easy sort of litmus test, lens, if you will, for looking at what my character is doing and deciding, well, in Act One, they are staying away from the corner. They're not peering into the shadows, and things are coming out of the shadows, and they are reacting. And in Act Two, Act Three, they're picking up the flashlight, and they are staring at what they were afraid to stare at before.
I sometimes look at really primal fears as a thing to give a character. I was talking to my therapist, and she started talking about trauma points. And I'm like, I'm sorry, can you repeat those? I'm just going to start taking notes right now. And like, stopped doing a therapy session and started being this is really useful.
I no longer need therapy. I have a professional interest in the information you're providing.
Yeah. So she said that most people have these trauma points where something had happened in childhood. Most of the time, you were not actually aware of what that is because it happened when you were fairly young, but it was along one of three axes. Safety, connection, and empowerment. And when we are looking at our Tony Stark example, the thing for him, his trauma point was connection because of his damaged relationship with his mom, with his dad. And you can see that it's like, how does he handle that? He makes Jeeves, who's a artificial intelligence, artificial intelligence connection. He buys friends essentially. And then when he realizes he has genuine friends, that then becomes the most vulnerable thing for him because it's something he absolutely cannot lose.
I think that doesn't necessarily mean that we can traumatize every character and we should, but we don't have to actually, because sometimes I think some of that is based in traumatic experiences, but also some of it's just a staying alive lizard brain, like human response, like safety, like every creature has a desire to remain alive. Like as a species, like they do things that will help to keep them alive.
Whether you're a mother or whether you're a brother, staying alive.
but like, I think of like my cat, like every cats want to get high. Like when there's a tornado warning. Yes, they do in every sense. No, but whenever there's a tornado
I've
warning.
I've lost many a spider plant to cats. So yes.
Yeah. Like you're like, I'll be like, no, we have to like get in lower part of the house.
Yeah.
Because there's a tornado and cats, but the cat's just like, something is weird in the air. And the best way to get away from weird things is to get as high as possible where I cannot possibly care anymore. No, to get to like a higher elevation where I can keep an eye on everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of baked in. And we have our own thing with that. We are also safer in numbers. Humans as a species have like not very good, like actual personal defenses. Like we don't have like really tough hides or really sharp teeth. We've got those opposable thumbs and the ability to come together in a group and build tools that help to keep us safe. Mm-hmm. And so all of those things are things that are very baked in, I think, as very primal fears.
Yeah.
And empowerment, being able to take action to change the environment around you, because we don't necessarily physically adapt to our environments the way that like a reptile might.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really nice to think about like those primal fears. I also just wanted to say that I love to write like horrible people as characters. So I'm like, they don't do that. Like when they let their fears get the best of them. And so a lot of times I love thinking about what happens if the character does not overcome their fears. What if they do the thing? They're like, I'm afraid that no one will love me, so I won't let anyone, or I will put up a wall. And that's just going to be my character arc, is becoming a worse version of myself. So it can be something that drives your characters positively or negatively.
Yeah. And that's something that, like, as you were talking, it was making me think about Sour Milk Girls and how like the fear absolutely takes over that character. For listeners who are just joining us, you can hear a deep dive about that in season 18.
Yeah. And it's what makes a truly relatable villain pop off the page. Yeah. Is understanding where they're coming from, understanding what their fears are rooted in. It's also what allows you to give a hero a truly believable low point, right? Yeah. The low point of them giving into a fear that you've seen them grapple with and understand intimately over the course of the series, that lets you buy into the moment where the hero does fail. Because so often we see those moments and they fall flat because it's not connected to anything. There was nothing actually at stake for the hero when things went off the rails. So giving them things to care about, giving them goals, motivations, but then giving them fears that go alongside those, that is the thing that I think really can juice your story and get it to that next level.
And I will say also, going back to the idea of the traumas, the trauma does not have to be a big trauma.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I don't know what some of like what my trauma triggers are, but knowing the axes that it's on can really help clarify how a character reacts to things, which again can help you shape the plot when you apply that lens to your story.
Exactly. And on that note, I think we should go to some homework.
I think that sounds like a great idea.
As we're looking to traumatize our listeners a little bit more. So the first thing I want you to do is to make note of all the major things that your main character is afraid of. List out the things, the fears that they have. And then take your MC and draw a little map of all the characters that they're connected to and describe their connection to those other characters in one sentence or less. Now, compare the list of relationships you've made to the list of fears that you've made for that character and see if those two lists are in conversation with each other. Are they supporting each other, or are they completely disconnected? If they are disconnected, start thinking about, how do I bring these two closer together to sort of get that feedback loop between relationship and fear?
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, Dan Wells, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.